Welcome to Persistent Broads, where we sound off on the news, politics, and culture affecting women across the state, country, and beyond. In this episode, we'll talk about why Ernst & Young thinks that men are waffles and women are pancakes. I'm Kate Vibbert.
I'm Emily Holly.
And I'm Lauren McElmeel. This week in Huffington Post, there was an article about how women at the accounting firm Ernst & Young were instructed on how to dress and act nicely around men.
Yeah, woof. It was like a it was like a training for women. They hired an outside consultant, Marcia Clark.
Not that one.
Yeah, not the one you were thinking. But they hired an outside consultant to teach the women how to better blend in and function in this very male-dominated company. And her advice was not great.
And it was also billed as a leadership and empowerment seminar. And
which makes it worse.
The title is Power, Presence, Purpose, or PPP, which is potentially the worst name ever of all time acronym. Just saying.
It's true.
Yeah, no.
They really didn't put a lot of thought into that one.
PPP.
So we wanted to discuss some of the finer points of this training and some of the things that really stood out to us that we, as broads, particularly enjoyed, if you will. So one of the first ones was that they were advising on clothing for ladies at Ernst & Young. Clothing must flatter, but short skirts are a no-no. After all, sexuality scrambles the mind.
These are all direct quotes, by the way. Like, this is from the memo.
Sexuality scrambles the mind, like eggs.
Men's minds, though.
Yeah, men's minds, not women's. It's not my fault if a man can't focus on his freaking work. Maybe he shouldn't be paid more than me.
Yeah, no, also, this is turning to a very breakfast-themed, like, thing. The scrambled eggs, pancakes, and waffles that we'll get to.
Yeah, it's a whole breakfast theme on how women should behave at Ernst & Young. But in terms of how clothing must flatter, short skirts are a no-no. They didn't advise on the length of skirt, so that's interesting.
I mean, I'm all for, like, dressing professional in
absolutely
the workplace, whatever, but this is just out of control and offensive.
Also, like, I know a lot of men's clothes that don't flatter. A lot of men that don't wear clothes that flatter them.
Truth.
Yeah.
So if we're going to apply this, we need to apply it across the board.
Amen.
I know. There's an entire television show about how men are buying clothes that don't flatter them. It's called Queer Eye.
And it's excellent.
It is excellent.
Get and, your suit tailored.
Also, if the Queer Eye guys are listening to this and would like to come on.
We love you so much.
We love you so much, and we will make you honorary broads. So,
and
please.
We will even make guacamole that has Greek yogurt in it.
Yeah.
Also, Jonathan Van Ness had a guest starring role in a Twitter by one of the actresses from Dairy Girls since Northern Ireland passed or finally has marriage equality and legal abortion. And so I will link that tweet because I can't do it properly, but it's just an amazing Jonathan Van Ness appearance.
He's a national treasure.
He is a national treasure.
But I think that, I don't know, I don't want a company advising me on my clothing. I feel like if I'm qualified to do a job, then part of hiring me for that job means that you trust me to dress and be professional.
Well, it's controlling the women because the men
right
can't control themselves.
Right. And I want to know what men are supposed to wear. Are they supposed to wear clothing that flatter?
Clearly not.
Are they, you know, are they supposed to not wear, I don't know, pants that are too tight? I don't know. I personally find men's clothing that isn't tailored and looks horrible to be more distracting than men's clothing that looks amazing and is tailored. Another one having to do with women's appearance is that women should look healthy and fit with a, quote, good haircut and, quote, manicured nails. And I wanted to mention this one because at the moment, my clothing isn't too bad, but at the moment, my hair is up in a messy ponytail and my nails are definitely not manicured. I'm a nail biter and I'm not ashamed to say it. We all have our vices.
When I read that quote or read that part of a memo, it reminded me of that scene in Knocked Up where Katherine Heigl has to go into work and she's literally pregnant and they think she's just gained weight and they tell her to tighten everything and not to lose weight, but tighten it.
Yeah. Just like stand on a scale and write down the amount you weigh and then subtract 20 pounds and just weigh that.
I mean, it's definitely not only like extremely body shaming, but also good haircut and manicured nails is such like classist coded language because not everyone can afford a quote unquote good haircut and not everyone can afford to have manicured nails that look, you know, quote again, quote unquote professional or up to snuff at Ernst & Young, which I don't know much about Ernst & Young's hiring practices, but I'm willing to bet that they're probably not hiring people that are like on the lower end of the poverty scale or things like that. But also just like health and fitness are really not the domain of your employer. And
it's none of your business. It's
none of your. Also, you don't know what someone's going through. You don't know what is happening to that. Right. They look this way that they do. Like this is so just very outside of anything that your employer should be a part of.
I like the good haircut because it's like, what do they give you, a list of haircuts you can get, and you take it to the hairdresser and you're like, oh, the Ernst & Young number 4, please.
I know. What?
That sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
It does. What constitutes a good haircut?
Yeah, what is a good haircut?
I imagine it's probably like the Ivanka Trump or the Shiv Roy, where it is like the short angular bob,
like a bob
where
it's situation. Straight,
which like...
Not too long.
Though, not too long, no. Then. No, and it's probably very straight, not curly, not wavy, because curly hair and wavy hair tends to look quote-unquote unkempt.
Unruly.
Which is why several magazines are like, straighten your hair before you go in for a job interview, which is ridiculous because that's, like, if they're going to find out that you have curly hair, this isn't seventh grade where everyone got their flat irons out and was like, oh, I only have silky straight hair.
These are my side bangs.
These are my, oh my God. Ugh. Did we all have the side bangs? Ugh. 2007, 2008 was a rough time. Rough
time.
I had some, like a semblance of side bangs.
Okay.
They weren't like super obvious, but yeah, a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Really, and then my sophomore year of high school, I definitely had like bang bangs. Like the kind that like the straight over the forehead.
Like the Zooey Deschanel bangs.
Yes.
Rory Gilmore.
The right, oh.
Yes.
She
so this,
pulled those off.
She's the only one I've ever seen.
This would have been like 2000, 2001-ish. And yeah.
You're ahead of the curve.
I definitely had those bangs. I definitely did not pull them off. So yeah. Also, the kind of thing too that people forget is, yeah, not only are these things expensive to maintain, but also time consuming.
I also just thought of something that manicured nails means different things to different people. So like maybe to Ernst & Young, manicured means like clipped French manicure, but manicured could also mean like the designs that you see in like the TV show Claws or like that you see on the runway. Manicured is such an open-ended type of thing, it's probably not those things that are not French manicure.
It probably doesn't mean those like designer manicures you can get with like the acrylic nails that are super long and, you know, wild colors and designs and things
gorgeous.
Like that are amazing that I probably can't pull off because I'm super clumsy. And
we also do a lot of typing and it's hard to
we
type
do a
with
lot
them.
Of typing so something would go wrong. But I also have a child, so that I pick up a lot.
You get them filed down a little bit.
I have to file them way down. But my guess is it doesn't include those. And it probably doesn't include ethnically diverse nail designs. I know different cultures do different things with their nails. They do different things with their appearances, like nose piercings, ear piercings, things like that. And my guess is they're... recommended appearances don't include those things either. So really, I think that they are definitely recommending like the Shiv Roy slash Ivanka Trump.
Yes, very. And I bet the good haircut probably does not involve natural hair or any sort of braids that are, again, beautiful and artistic and well-designed and everything. And I feel like it was just recently that people were allowed to wear like certain braid styles or certain dreadlock styles in the military. And that seems so odd because it's just hair, people.
Well, there are schools. There are stories occasionally where schools are kicking out.
Or cutting their hair. Or like cutting their hair.
And they're kicking out students of color that have these amazing, you know, just braided hair. And they're kicking them out for not adhering to their dress code or suspending them or cutting their hair or things like that. Because
their dress codes are racist.
Right. So I just...
It's pretty coded in, like, white privilege.
Just a smidge.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They also say that women often speak briefly and often ramble and miss the point in meetings. By comparison, a man will speak at length because he really believes in his idea. And it says, women don't interrupt effectively like men, and women wait their turn that never comes and raise their hands.
Emily's raising her hand. She's waiting. She's not going to interrupt us, though.
I'm not going to interrupt you. That's true.
That's mean.
It's rude. And rude. It's rude.
This is a bit more relatable, this one, for me, because when I think about how I act in the workplace and professionally, I tend to, if I'm on a big conference call or, you know, if I'm talking to a big group of employees, I tend to try and make my point as effectively and expediently as possible. And I don't know why that is. I think it's because my inclination is that women are taught just from a young age to take up less room and... Mm-hmm.
What?
Be concise and be short and don't waste people's time and don't ramble. So I think that comes from like a deep place of toxic masculinity, but it's something I should work on personally. And I think just, you know, identifying it in this article is helpful for me because now I'm thinking about it and I will take up time. I will take up time with my good ideas.
Do it.
I think it's also interesting that like a man will speak at length because he really believes in his idea, that passion for an idea comes off really differently for when it's a man speaking as opposed to when it's a woman speaking. I remember back during the Sheryl Sandberg days of Lean In, and they were talking about how men have leadership skills, women are bossy, where it would be if a woman was acting in a quote unquote masculine way or had a strong personality or something, she was coded as too ambitious, shrill, shrewish, aggressive.
A bitch.
Yeah. One of the next ones that they talked about when this was specifically in dealing with men on an individual level. And this one is, don't talk to a man face to face. Men see that as threatening. Are they bears? Like... Why? I can't even like form a full sentence because it's just so ridiculous that like we talk a lot about like make eye contact, don't talk to people face to face. This also is going to like cost women opportunities in the workplace if they can't talk to, likely they're like just based on data of like people in the C-suite and people that they're, if they can't talk to like their coworkers, their colleagues, their superiors who are men, they're going to lose out on opportunities and not have the same experiences and just lose out.
Well, the face-to-face idea is, if you're talking to someone face-to-face, to me, it seems that you are being treated as an equal. Each person is equal in the situation, in the negotiation, whatever. But if you're then, instead of talking to someone face-to-face, you're talking to a woman is supposed to talk to a man with their head down or what? Like, bowed? Like, what? It's reinforcing the idea that men and women at work are just not equal and don't deserve equal pay and don't deserve equal professions. And it's really sad.
It's very
upsetting. What is this, Voldemort? Don't talk face-to-face.
I wonder what the art of the deal suggests that you do in negotiating and making a deal.
I don't think
steal everyone's money.
Yeah, that's what that means. I was gonna say, I don't think the art of the deal came in like a special pink edition like those Bic pens for her did.
Right.
Ugh. Buy a casino with your dad's things, money and bankrupt it as fast as possible.
Don't rent out apartments to black people and
that's a key thing.
Things in pink. That's like a whole other Broads episode.
I think the women who work thing by Ivanka Trump, that's basically just like a Pinterest board turned into a book.
I think the eye contact thing is so interesting because when I was getting my master's, I had to take a class on giving speeches. Mm-hmm. And they teach you in this class that when you're giving speeches, you're supposed to make eye contact with various people in the room and you kind of switch about. And so I guess you're not supposed to look men directly in the eye.
You're not supposed to look
confident. Find it threatening, like rabid dogs.
Like, are you supposed, is this like, to continue?
Is it like when like something's charging at you, you're not supposed to look it in the eye?
I was going to say to use Kate's Voldemort thing, I'm thinking of like the hippogriff thing where you have to like bow to the hippogriff and let it come to you. And if it finds you threatening, it'll charge at you. And I don't really
kinda like my abused rescue dog.
Oh, Beasley. Oh.
Buckbeak, we wish you well. Wherever
you flew to.
Yeah. But I think perhaps the most egregious item on this list, fully the most egregious of all, is that it says women's brains absorb information like pancakes soak up syrup, so it's hard for them to focus, the attendees were told. Men's brains are more like waffles. They're better able to focus because the information collects in each little waffle square. Okay, so has you ever eaten a waffle or a pancake with syrup? Please tell me.
Maybe Marcia Clark has never had breakfast before, and that's like what this whole thing is about.
I could talk about this for hours, but it's the exact reason I don't like eating syrup with waffles. Syrup gets stuck in the little square, and then you cut it open, and you put the waffle in your mouth, and the syrup is all on one side of your mouth because it collected in the square.
Right, and if it's collected for too long, it gets soggy.
Yeah.
But on the other hand...
Is this calling women's brains soggy?
No, absorbent. Because of the pancake scenario, you drizzle syrup all over the pancake. And I don't know if you've ever drizzled syrup over a pancake, but it really absorbs into the pancake.
Which also gets soggy.
And that's full surface area absorption. You put it in your mouth and you know where it's going to be syrupy, where it's not going to be more pancakey. And it's just so frustrating because... Breakfast foods are nothing to be joked about. And don't give them a stupid analogy.
Breakfast is serious business.
Breakfast is serious business. I find it interesting that they use the analogy women's brains absorb information like pancakes, where a just as applicable metaphor could have been women's brains absorb information like sponges, since they soak up things. And I mean, honestly, the fact that women's brains are supposedly supposed to absorb information that like soaks up everything. Isn't that a good thing? Yeah. Like, I would want people working for me to like know a lot, take in a lot of information, be able to like think broadly. Whereas this men's brains are like waffles thing is almost like
in the square. It's saying
everything is in its own little square, compartmentalized, and like they can't see.
Maybe that's why men don't think creative.
What I think is interesting though is so if they're saying that men's brains are more like waffles and they're better able to focus because the information is contained, are they saying that men are better able to compartmentalize information than women? It seems like that's what they're saying.
I
find that utterly ridiculous because not only am I a woman and a professional, but I'm a working mom, which that's all about compartmentalizing. Like right now, I am thinking about this podcast. I'm thinking about my job. I'm thinking about the 3 baskets of laundry I have to fold. I'm thinking about my sick toddler at home. I'm thinking about my mom taking care of my sick toddler. I'm thinking about what I'm going to eat for dinner. I'm thinking about what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm thinking about all of these things at the same time while recording this podcast.
And we ran out of toilet paper.
Running out of toilet paper is the worst. So far, that is not the problem at my house.
That's what I'm
Although,
worrying about.
I am wondering though if I left a load of laundry in the wash and if it's gonna smell when I get home. See,
oh, no.
Now that's compartmentalizing.
Yes,
and I am still able to have this conversation and talk productively, and I'm still able to do my job and take care of my child and, you know, participate in my marriage and be a good friend and a good sister and a good daughter. That's compartmentalizing. I compartmentalize in my life every single day. I probably compartmentalize in my sleep. Maybe that's why I wake up so tired every morning.
Do a lot of compartmentalizing. It's exhausting.
It is exhausting. But I just, like, that analogy, not only is it stupid and insulting to breakfast food, but it also doesn't make any sense. Women stereotypically are known for our ability to multitask.
Yeah.
Walk and chew gum at the same time. So, if anything, because so much more is expected of us in the workplace and at home in our personal lives, I would think that women would have better compartmentalizing skills than men. So the other thing that was discussed are so-called masculine traits, which are also just delightful. They're masculine traits versus feminine traits, and how that means how effective you are in the workplace. And so some of these, the first few are acts as a leader, aggressive, ambitious, and analytical. Those are known as masculine traits. Leadership abilities, also known as masculine traits. Strong personality and willing to take a stand, also masculine traits.
These are also all considered masculine by the Marcia Clark and Associates, not like by society writ large necessarily.
Right.
Thank God.
But, yeah. But one of the, so apparently this whole masculine feminine trait thing, these women were given a score sheet and they had to give themselves score based on whether or not they had specifically feminine traits or masculine traits. And the feminine traits included things like affectionate, cheerful, childlike, compassionate, gullible, and loves children and yielding, which sounds like straight out of like a home ec book or an Emily Post book from like the 1950s.
Yeah.
Or earlier.
I was just thinking of like the first
book. How
are
books. We supposed to work at Ernst & Young and get dinner on the table for our husbands by 5 o'clock?
By 5 o'clock.
How?
I feel like we need to watch Mona Lisa Smile now and review it, because this is very much the plot of this.
Stay tuned for when we talk about Mona Lisa Smile.
And Julia Roberts, Julia Stiles, Kirsten Dunst, that movie.
Maggie
Gyllenhaal. Oh, the best. Jennifer Goodwin.
But I mean, first of all, yielding is another word for passive or demure. Mm-hmm. That's how I read that word when I read this article, which we'll link to in the show notes. But yielding, I feel like it's just another way of saying demure.
There's also, I'm looking at the full list that they have on the article, and one of the traits under feminine is does not use harsh language. And to that, like to say, fuck that.
Seriously.
Because, and also the next one is eager to soothe hurt feelings. And no, I'm not sorry I said that. So
eager
I'm,
to soothe hurt
so feelings? So I'm not soothing anyone's hurt feelings that I said fuck.
That's what your HR rep is for.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe they don't have HR.
But also, apparently not. Yeah. Because also, this is a huge HR violation of a sheet. God.
One of the other things on the feminine side is sensitive to the needs of others, which...
The fuck does that mean?
I feel like is like almost coded language for like nurturing or mothering or something. And why is that not a... And the fact that is not a...
The last time I checked, this is an accounting firm.
Right. And I mean, I'm
sorry,
not...
I interrupted you.
I didn't go into accounting because I don't like math, and I would rather pay people to do that kind of thing for me.
That's why we have Ernst & Young's.
But I feel like math, you don't really need any of these traits to do math.
No.
Well, just like on a base level, this is a profession as an accountant. You're doing a job. Why are we even talking about if you're able to nurture or you're childlike or you're sensitive to people? Like, sure, you have to be sensitive to your coworkers and work on a team and be, you know, a team player. But that doesn't mean you... What is it? Childlike wonder? What are the things?
It's compassionate. Childlike wonder.
Loyal, soft-spoken, tender. Tender?
The gullible.
Tender is the knight.
I decorate my office like a fairyland.
The other one...
Like, you're just accounting. You're doing a job. You don't need to have all these freaking...
No, all the women, like categorize their work in like Lisa Frank folders.
That is an office that I want to work in.
Right.
Well, one of the other things on the masculine side is athletic. What does that have to do with being an accountant? Unless you're like sprinting back and forth to like your abacus or something, like your giant abacus that you have to move each bead along. You're going to sit at a desk and be sedentary and look at Excel spreadsheets.
And do like algebra.
And do math. And I don't know any accountants, so I'm sorry if we're completely missing the point of what you're
talking about. I still love you, Steve. You're still a good cousin.
One of the other things on this list, because we're going to spend a lot of time on this list because it's just cuckoo bananas. And one of them on the masculine side is defends one's beliefs. They deal in math, in numbers, that like you don't have to have any belief system to like think that your numbers are right, because you will know that they are right, because math does not, like, math's not a religion. Math doesn't like require any faith.
Right. It's just straight up. Like, it's just a fact. Like, this is what this math says.
Yeah.
So that's that. I don't know.
And I mean, like, I can see defending your work maybe, but that's different than defending your beliefs, like, or defending your values or something. And
but if a woman were to defend her beliefs or her values,
no,
well then she'd just be a bitch.
Yes,
yeah, huge bitch.
They're the word forceful,
a shrill bitch.
Yes,
shrill bitch.
Yep.
Stay tuned for our merch that says shrill bitch. other things on here is that like dominant and forceful, which again
are positive in men.
Yeah, are positive in men. Again, good. Accountants.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting to note is that none of the feminine traits involve leadership.
No.
Which apparently...
Why would they?
Which apparently was the purpose of this training, so that to teach women how to build some leadership skills and some more masculine traits, I suppose. But I would actually argue that...
I don't think it does.
Right. But I would actually argue that some of these so-called feminine traits actually do demonstrate some leadership skills.
Yeah.
I think that to be an effective leader, I think you do have to be compassionate. I think you have to be compassionate of the people that you work for, because people have different needs and people learn differently and people work differently. And compassion is part of understanding and bringing everyone together and helping make that work.
I think this was very much a leadership seminar that was like, to be a leader, you must be a man or pretend that you're like take on masculine things without seeing that like leadership styles are a thing, and you don't have to be like, I'm forgetting the name of the guy from 9 to 5 that's the boss, but like you don't have to be that kind of boss. You could be like, I don't know, like a Leslie Knope kind of boss. You could be like who's the editor-in-chief on The Bold Type? You could be like that lady. You could be like Miranda Priestly, who she gets the job done. I don't think she's like a particularly pleasant person, but she...
Well, they would probably say that she has masculine traits.
Yes. Or that, I mean, also the fact that like any sort of trait that a woman might have that denotes leadership is automatically coded as masculine, and that like any other thing that she might have used to get to that point, like being sympathetic to like her employees, being compassionate, being understanding, or things like that, are that work just as well as being like a dick about things.
I feel bad for this Marsha Clark, this trainer, and her business, because I feel like, first of all, she seems older. And as in she's been in the business world for a long time.
She's also had to deal with the fact that there is another Marsha Clark out there who is probably more famous than she is.
True.
And I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Apology accepted, Lauren. Thank you. It's okay. We're still friends. Thank you for being concerned about my feelings.
Of course.
But I feel bad for this Marsha Clark, because I feel like things have happened to her in her career that have made her feel like she has to fit into this specific column. And I would love to sit down with her and buy her a meal and say, Marsha, this isn't how it has to be. You can be a persistent broad. You don't have to be like what you're suggesting to be successful in the business world or in any other career for that matter. You can be yourself and do a good job.
Change the system, not yourself.
Exactly. Very true. You can wear your hair in the occasional messy ponytail and go to work with grape Tylenol on your blouse and still manage to get the job done.
It's never happened to you, has it?
It's never happened to me, especially not today.
That's all we have this week for episode 3 of Persistent Broads. And remember, it's hard out here for a broad.
Persistent Broads is part of the Potluck Media Network and would not be possible without grassroots supporters like you. For more information, visit potluck.fm and find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks for listening.